Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Duncan McHugh, sitting in for Matt Galloway, and this is a podcast from the March 7th edition of The Current.
I know there's a lot of others that are going through what I am going through, but I decided to go public with this because I want others to speak out to this government that has traumatized us enough.
Jessie Waldron is a Cree survivor of the federal Indian day school system. She's speaking out about the multi-billion-dollar settlement the federal government reached with the survivors.
They're the ones that caused all our problems. And now all their band-aid solutions are not working, but they're still not willing to admit that they have done the wrong for us.
Now, Jessie Waldron wants the Supreme Court of Canada to intervene because she says the government, the claims administrator, and the law firm that struck the 2019 settlement agreement on behalf of survivors have failed to represent their best interests. CBC reporter Olivia Stefanovich has been covering this story. She joins me here in Ottawa. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us more about Jessie's story.
Well, Jessie is a survivor from the Waterhen Lake Indian Day School, an institution she was forced to attend in the 1960s and 70s. The school was located in her community of Waterhen Lake First Nation, just north of Meadow Lake, Saskatchewan. And Waldron attended the school from kindergarten until grade 6. She's 65 years old now, Duncan, and she says to this day she still can't see a dentist without telling them what she went through at day school.
We used to have dentists that came in to the reserve, and my parents never consented for us to see the dentists. And I swear that we were never, even though they just opened our mouths and just held us down, and I'm pretty sure to this day that they started pulling my teeth out before they even froze, because they just, you know. To this day, I'm very fearful of dentists as well because of that reason. And when I go to see a dentist now, I have to tell them about my situation, and I have to make sure that I get the right dentist from this day on.
So it's experiences like this that Waldron says she went through that came flooding back to her when she filled out her application form for compensation.
Before we get to the compensation agreement, I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with the history of residential schools now, thanks to the TRC and others. But remind listeners about day schools and what these children went through.
Well, day schools were similar to residential schools. The main goal was to assimilate First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children into this Euro-Canadian culture. And children faced abuse just like they did in residential school, sexual, physical, psychological. The main difference really is in the name, day school, the fact that these students went to these institutions for the day and then went home at night. And for that reason, these students were shut out of a $1.9 billion settlement agreement that residential school survivors came to with Ottawa back in 2006.
Didn't get the same apology either.
That's right. So former Prime Minister Stephen Harper did not mention day schools when he offered his historic residential school apology in the House of Commons. This despite the fact that there were more Indigenous children who went to day school than residential schools. There were nearly 700 of these institutions that existed across the country from the 1920s until the last school closed in the year 2000. And just to underscore how the federal government still sees a difference between day school survivors and residential school survivors, when we published a web story earlier this week about day schools, we put a crisis line for the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement. Survivors could call this line to get help if they were triggered by anything in the story. And a spokesperson for the Department of Crown and Indigenous Relations at the federal government got in touch with us to say, well, day school survivors can't use that line. They actually have to call the General Hope for Wellness line for all Indigenous people.
Okay, so there was a compensation agreement reached back in 2019. What was that meant to accomplish?
Well, the settlement was supposed to provide some form of long-awaited justice for these survivors, and they had fought for years to have their own settlement. So there was an individual compensation component, compensation ranging from $10,000 to up to $200,000, and there was also money set aside for wellness and cultural projects through a $200 million legacy fund for these survivors.
The process for residential school survivors was so long, so drawn out in terms of trying to get the compensation. What was it like for Indian Day School survivors in terms of trying to get the compensation?
So this process was supposed to be simplified and as painless as possible. All survivors had to do was fill out a form. There would be no adversarial hearings like there were in the residential school settlement when we saw hearings where federal lawyers were pitted against survivors.
So how was this one different then?
So under the day school settlement, survivors weren't supposed to be re-traumatized or be cross-examined about their experience. They were asked to apply for one of five levels of compensation, and all they had to do was provide their story, and for each level of claim, they had to provide more evidence, things like medical records, and they even asked for diary entries if some of these survivors kept these records. But for the lowest amount of compensation, for the $10,000, all they had to do was tick a box and mail their claim in. So we put this to David Lametti. We had a chance to catch up with him. He was the justice minister when this settlement agreement was approved back in 2019 before the federal court. And he says the government had good intentions when it decided to settle with day school survivors.
And what we tried to do was simplify the process here in order that survivors had easier access to the settlement monies without necessarily having to go through the trauma that they had to again. It's not a perfect process, but we thought we had improved it.
And by simplify, what do you mean?
Make it easier from the time you ask for or make a claim for compensation and getting that compensation, reducing the number of steps, reducing the kind of information that you had to give. Really, the goal is to try to not have a person become re-traumatized through the retelling of a traumatic event or a series of traumatic events, which is pretty much always the case in these cases.
But as we heard from Jesse, people were re-traumatized through this compensation process, and they feel shortchanged. And Duncan, there were early warning signs that something wrong could happen here. In fact, the former chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission raised concerns on this very program back in 2019. At the time, Murray Sinclair was worried that this settlement agreement was moving in the complete opposite direction of the residential school settlement. Mm-hmm. And Sinclair told The Current that survivors were being asked to do all the work themselves to seek compensation for the alleged abuse that they suffered. So we put this to Lametti, and he says that he thought that the government had improved the compensation process. And he says there are lessons here for future settlements.
We heard from Jesse Waldron, one survivor, off the top of the show. Are there any others that are speaking up?
Well, we spoke to Margaret Swan, who has concerns, and she said she heard concerns about this whole process from the very beginning. Swan is a survivor of the Dog Creek Day School in Lake Manitoba First Nation in Manitoba, and she was one of the lead plaintiffs for this settlement. So she advocated for it, promoted it, and now she's calling for a review.
Both entities, the law firm and Deloitte, were not as helpful as they could have been. So there's that piece, and then the other piece is the opening up of old wounds and our past trauma. There was not enough help on scene in our communities to deal with the reopening of those wounds. And I also want to state very clearly, and I've said this right from the get-go, there is no amount of money that will make up for the damage that's been caused by the 60 scoop residential school and day school. We are still living with that trauma today, and we are working hard to move beyond that, but it's a life journey for many of us, and too much still going on. We need all the help we can get dealing with our past.
Is she talked about there not being enough help? What does she mean by that?
Well, Swan has collected hundreds of complaints from day school survivors about the settlement process, and there's a common theme. She says that survivors weren't able to reach anyone from the settlement agreement for help with the compensation process, that they were left pretty much on their own. They didn't get help, she says, from the law firm Gowling, which was hired to represent their interests as class counsel, or Deloitte, an auditing and consulting firm that was appointed by the federal court to be claims administrator here. So when we look at Jessie's story, you know, she said that she wasn't able to reach either Gowling or Deloitte for help. There was a hotline actually set up for survivors to call if they had questions about their claims form. She says she did that multiple times but could never get through. And at one point, Duncan, she says she even drove from her home in Grand Prairie, Alberta, all the way back to her First Nation in northern Saskatchewan to meet with lawyers from Gowling because they were supposed to hold, she says, a community meeting. But when she arrived, she says that the meeting was canceled. So out of desperation and frustration, Jessie says that she applied for this lowest level of compensation, the $10,000, because all she had to do was tick a box. She didn't have to provide her story. And it was only afterwards that she realized she could hire her own lawyer. They went through her claim, went through what she went through at day school. They tried to resubmit this information, but Deloitte would not accept it. Nicholas Racine is her lawyer.
You know, these aren't insurance claims. These are claims dealing with real people who were victims of abuse as children. And you need a process that is flexible and accommodating, not one that's just expedient and cost-effective. And I think expediency and cost-effectiveness overshadowed what was really important for survivors. And I know from dealing with survivors for over a decade now that just being heard is extremely important. And when you have somebody that goes through the struggle of putting down in words what they experienced only to have that ignored, that's clearly the wrong way to approach a process like this.
So Jessie is now turning to the Supreme Court of Canada to see if the top bench will allow her to resubmit her claim.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
That's one day school survivor. There are thousands. So what about all the other survivors?
Well, there are tens of thousands of day school survivors who are still waiting for their claims to be settled. And Ottawa received almost 185,000 applications for compensation. And the majority, Duncan, were filed for the lowest level.
So what effect could that have that so many of the claims were filed at that low level of compensation?
Well, Louise Mayo is a day school survivor from Ganawage, Mohawk community south of Montreal. I spoke to her about this, and she says that the disproportionate number of claims for level one just doesn't make sense to her.
Your average Canadian will look at it and say, well, it couldn't have been that bad for the Indian day school survivors who attended school since 1921 to 1988, that, you know, only a smaller percentage of people applied for the higher levels. It is a misrepresentation of the actual level of harm that occurred.
So Mayo helped other day school survivors in Ganawage fill out their claims. And she says it could take a couple of sessions. So they wouldn't get the story from their childhood right away. Sometimes it could take 3 or 4 sessions to get the full story to be able to submit it in a way that Deloitte would accept. And many survivors didn't have anyone like Mayo to turn to. So Mayo actually, you know, says that she believes that many survivors just applied for the lowest amount of compensation because they didn't know who to turn to for help. They couldn't get help. And in some cases, they were denied the higher levels because they didn't fill out the forms correctly.
I've heard that as well. It can be really difficult sitting down to answer some of these questions for the first time. It takes a long time. You spoke with the Minister of Crown Indigenous Relations. What did he have to say about this?
That's right. So we put these concerns to Minister Gary Andensangeri of Crown Indigenous Relations, and he says he's only aware of one complaint about the settlement.
I'm satisfied that we have a process in place that is meant to ensure that individual survivors are not re-traumatized. Is it perfect? I don't believe it is. And I think if there are issues, then we will definitely be able to bring it up. And you can see that the payout has actually been expanded substantially, which to me in part says we are looking at experiences faced by individuals and reflecting that in the payments that's going in.
The minister just said that the payout's been expanded substantially. Well, what does he mean by that?
Well, the settlement was initially pegged at just over $1 billion, but CBC News has learned that Ottawa has so far paid almost $6 billion in compensation. On top of this, Ottawa is also paying the auditing and consulting firm Deloitte $115 million for its work as claim administrator, and class counsel $65 million.
Class counsel, that's the lawyers. Who are they?
That's right. So that's Gowling, this Ottawa-based law firm that also works internationally. It initiated the class action against Ottawa on behalf of survivors to get this multi-billion dollar settlement.
$65 million, that sounds like a hefty paycheck. What did they need that money for?
Well, Ottawa paid $55 million for Gowling's work on the settlement. So that was just for the settlement. And then an additional $7 million was provided to Gowling so the law firm could continue providing free legal services to survivors over the course of 4 years. And we've learned that as the end of those 4 years was approaching, that Gowling planned to cease legal services for survivors unless it was paid an additional $6 million over 3 years. Now, we learned that Ottawa didn't want to offer this much. In fact, it offered half of this amount that Gowling was asking for. And Ottawa even considered replacing Gowling with an Indigenous-led firm. The two sides clashed in federal court, and they reached a last-minute compromise before the end of Gowling's deadline to give Gowling an additional $3 million to extend legal services to survivors until mid-2025, so next year. We put this to Yasminka Kalajic. She's the founding director of the Class Action Clinic at the University of Windsor, where she's also a law professor.
What is unusual is that despite there being a deadline and a set fixed amount for legal work to be performed by class counsel, they went back to court and ultimately negotiated with the defendant for even more money. So despite there being a contract under which they were obligated to perform legal work for a set amount of money, they used up all those resources and were able to negotiate an additional fee. And that isn't something that we see every day at all. But it underscores, of course, that the contract isn't necessarily written in stone. The parties are able to negotiate, and it's that flexibility that I would have liked to have seen when Ms. Waldron, for example, asked for relief when it came to filing an amended claim form. It's the kind of flexibility that I would have liked to have seen when other class members in Six Nations asked for an extension of the deadline because of the issues people were facing in getting information and filing claims.
So both Gowling and Deloitte declined CBC's requests for interviews. A communication firm responded on their behalf, saying that the firms can't comment on what they called third-party views about the court-approved deal.
You've certainly raised a lot of questions here. What happens now?
Well, it could take a couple of months before the Supreme Court of Canada makes a decision about whether to hear Jesse's case. And if it does, it will put Ottawa in a difficult position, facing off against one of the day school survivors it promised to help. But if the court doesn't agree to hear Jesse's case, this could be the end of the line for Jesse. And she's already been denied again by Deloitte, the federal court, and the Federal Court of Appeal.
I was denied, of course, three times, because I forgot to click a box which was on there. So their words, their truth and reconciliation does not mean anything at all to me, and I'm sure I speak for a lot of other people.
And Duncan, Jesse isn't the only one challenging the day school settlement in court, there's actually a separate case by the elected council for Six Nations of the Grand River, a Haudenosaunee community near Hamilton, Ontario, and a day school survivor named Audrey Hill from that community. They say the claims period here was hampered by the pandemic. It took place during COVID-19, and survivors had a hard time accessing documentation, needed to back up their claims because of lockdowns. So they're asking for the claims period to be reopened and extended until the end of next year. And that decision is currently rests with the Federal Court of Appeal.
Lots to keep our eye on, obviously. Olivia, thank you for your work.
You're welcome.
Olivia Stefanovic is a CBC reporter based in Ottawa.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.